There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 396. So we have just announced that Bill Hader was supposed to be the guest for Talking Bad this weekend, which would be on the Sunday the 18th, I believe. And instead, he has graciously agreed to go to a little bit later in the season because Aaron Paul's schedule opened up. So our guests are going to be Aaron Paul and Anna Gunn. So Jesse and Skylar on Talking Bad this Sunday night at 11 p.m. after Low Winter Sun, which is after Breaking Bad. There's 7 episodes left. Haven't seen the next episode yet, but after the way the last one ended, I really want to. I can't watch ahead, Katie. I can't watch ahead because I don't want to know. I don't want to know what happens. But I can't have it in my head.
Yeah, no, it's too exciting. I wouldn't be able to watch it without spoiling it.
You don't want to, and then because you have to watch it under a veil of complete secrecy.
Yeah, and that's no fun.
I would have to get my invisibility cloak and throw it over myself and my laptop and watch it, and then just stay there and not eat or anything so that I wouldn't blurt something out at some point. So that'll be happening. And then also Aaron Paul just posted a video on the Nerdist channel of his when Cranston did an AMA, he picked his top 5 favorite questions from the AMA. So Aaron Paul decided to one-up him and basically gave out what he calls the bitchies. So awards. He gave out a series of awards to Redditors from his AMA. So that's at the Nerdist channel right now. YouTube.com/Nerdist. I would like to thank Warby Parker for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist podcast. Warby Parker is a new concept in eyewear, and not that the eyewear has crazy shapes or that it goes onto a different part of your head. It's essentially a new way to get, try on, and then purchase eyewear. So basically these 4 friends came together and they were sick of awful eyewear that was overpriced and took forever to get to people. And, you know, they believe that eyewear should not cost $300 plus. I agree. I have purchased and lost or destroyed many pairs of glasses that were over $300. And the Warby Parker aesthetic, just so you guys know, is sort of vintage inspired. There's a little bit of contemporary twist to it. But every pair is custom fit with anti-reflective polycarbonate prescription lenses. And it's high quality. It's better looking prescription eyewear at a fraction of the price. So the glasses are available exclusively through the website, warbyparker.com, which is WarbyParker.com. And showrooms, their glasses start at $95. $95. And so essentially what happens is you look on their website, you go, hey, I like this handful of pairs of glasses, and then they will send them to you. You try them on, whichever ones you like, you send back. And then if you purchase within 48 hours, you get your glasses. You have to give them your prescription, of course. That they can't guess. But as long as you provide them information and you buy a pair of glasses, you'll have it in 48 hours. So Warby Parker, if you need your glasses, that is definitely the place to get them. You don't have to go into an eyeglasses store and spend a lot of time. You can totally do it on the fly. So do that. Go to warbyparker.com and pick up your glasses. I do want to point out that that expedited shipping does not count for home try-ons. It's only if you purchase the glasses. But, you know, you can hang on to the glasses, try them on, send them back, and then you'll get your glasses right away in 2 days with the offer code Nerdist. So Warby Parker, thanks for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is our dear, dear friend, Eddie Pepitone. Eddie Pepitone! Who is, if you've never seen Eddie live, you have to. It's an experience. He's one of those guys that no matter where I am and he's performing, I will always go I will always get there a little bit early to see him perform if I have a set on the same show because he is that fucking amazing. So he has a guy made a documentary, just a fan of Eddie's made a documentary about him called The Bitter Buddha, which is out on all the available portals that you can get digital content. And Eddie's a great guy, and we love him, and we are very happy to have him on the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 396. With Eddie Pepitone! It's not a great Eddie Pepitone I just did. So instead of listening to my Eddie Pepitone impersonation, let's listen to the best Eddie Pepitone impersonator, Eddie Pepitone.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Tell you why we shouldn't talk about this in the podcast.
Yeah, okay.
Because I don't want to say I don't want to say here's the Eddie Pepitone podcast. There are Breaking Bad spoilers. Less people will listen if there are spoilers.
Get it out now.
But yeah, how do you talk about shit these days? We could talk about that a little bit. How do you talk about shit these days since everyone tapes everything?
It's ridiculous.
It's fucking ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Right? Is it really a spoiler to talk about something the day after it happened?
I've talked about this on this show or another podcast I've done where I think we put it at 7 months.
Before, that's insane.
That's
though.
The 7 months is when people when people can't get mad at you, and if they do get mad on you, that's really on them.
You're recording, right, Katie? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. I'd say if you're a season behind on something,
yeah, then that's on you.
Then that's
on that's really on you.
You could talk about it day after.
You can talk about it.
People still go nuts about the fucking The Wire spoilers.
Now that's like, very funny, actually.
It's like, what the fuck is your problem?
You know, if the Bible if the Bible came out
I haven't finished it. I haven't finished it.
That's what I mean. It's like that, you know?
I got to Genesis. It's so far really good. Yeah, it's very uplifting.
Yeah. Oh my God, when he creates the heavens and the earth?
Oh no, I'm still at Peter Frampton.
Oh. He created Peter Frampton. Spoilers.
Phil Collins has not entered the picture as the lead singer yet.
Spoilers.
I have it. Last time I saw Eddie, we were shoved in a BMW on the way back to the airport from Sketchfest.
Oh fuck, the San Francisco Sketchfest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was brutal.
It was me, Eddie, Besser, and Ian Roberts. It was the four biggest comedians you could shove in
Except
a car.
Besser.
You mean most famous?
Yeah, yeah. But Besser's like super. Besser on his own is like 6.5 feet tall.
So you were there when we went to San Francisco Airport
Oakland Airport, and you looked at your thing. It's like, I'm supposed to go there.
Yeah.
Like,
that
oh,
was
fuck, we all are.
Unbelievable. Unfucking. I was pissed off at that. That our little driver was just taking us to San Francisco Airport, and we almost got to San Francisco Airport. We're supposed to be in the Oakland Airport.
Oh, yeah. That's in a completely different direction.
We made it.
And we're all squeezed together, and so we had to just, you know, we made it. But it was like, what the fuck?
If you were really a nice guy, you would have just flown out of San Francisco. You would have just found a way to fly to San Francisco. Oh, it's fine.
I should have. I should have accommodated that mistake. Never mind. Let me get a very expensive day of ticket if I can.
We'll all rent a smaller car and drive back to Los Angeles.
That was a miserable experience, that whole ride. I left a really nice hat in that car and never got it back as well. I thought it was an evil ride.
Mm-hmm. Ian was shotgun, right? So what? It was us three in the back.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It was terrific.
It was a good conversation.
It was quite a ride. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
The last time, what did you guys talk about the whole time?
I don't remember.
Probably about the fact that we were all squeezed in the car.
We were ragging on other comics.
That's for the record.
I like
anyone
that.
Anyone not in comedy, when you're on the festival ride from the airport to the festival is always ragging on whatever comedians aren't in the car. I mean, I know, Chris, you don't find that anymore because you probably get a town car on your own. Mm-hmm. But those of us that have to still ride a van.
Okay, now wait a minute. You know, having a car service is very convenient.
Yeah, no, it's just,
you know, it's not that I don't like being around other people. I just don't want to hear them talk.
If I could have a rider,
not to
I would.
Lose touch. With the I'm great sorry,
Eddie. I didn't address you first. I wasn't looking at you, so it was a big liberty that you took to just talk out that way. The first time I met Eddie was in like 2001, maybe, when you were doing Hump Day with Sean Conroy
at the
UCB in New York was over by McManus.
Oh my God.
McManus pub over there. It was like that building was like falling down.
The UCB? Or
the old McManus? UCB, yeah.
I seem
to remember, like, wasn't it? It was kind of in a sad state, right?
Yeah, very sad.
Maybe it did fall down.
It could have, but they moved it before that happened, so it didn't fall on anyone. But that was a really fun show. That was the first time I met you, and you and Sean have been doing this Wednesday night show there for a while, right?
Right, right. I love the chemistry that me and Sean have. He's like a great straight man.
Yeah.
And funny freaking straight man. And I just get to go off the wall, you know, and he reels me in. But that was a really fun show. That was, yeah.
Where did you start? Are you from New York? Where are you from?
I don't want to brag about that, but yes, I was born in Brooklyn.
Oh.
And again, in the Flatbush area. There was a lot of depression in that area, but that I'm getting into the heart of things. Let me just stay on the surface. That's what we do well, right? We stay on the surface because if I really wanted to talk about what was really going on with me, it would be so fucking bleak.
No, but but you do that in your but you still manage to do that in your act, in your set. You still manage to talk about real stuff.
I do. It's like I think because depression and angst is so omnipresent in my life that I now talk about it like I'm talking about, like, oh, I got a muffin today on Larchmont Boulevard. Like the
so
same
depression's
way.
Like a sadness muffin. You get like I got a sadness muffin today.
From
2 p.m. until about 8 p.m. I didn't leave the bakery, which I call
well,
my
I
home.
Think you're taking the analogy a little far with the muffin there.
Really?
A little.
You're the one who brought up the muffin.
I shouldn't have.
So,
no, what I meant...
Good, you should feel bad.
There's different levels of it, too, based on the number of blueberries.
Eddie, I don't know. I was walking up Larchmont today in a rage for some reason.
I was on Larchmont.
Everybody...
Today.
Were you on Larchmont?
Yeah,
it's too nice. Do you know that things, when they're too nice, get me very angry?
Really? And Larchmont is one of those things?
At Boulevard, yeah.
I don't need to see a woman in her mid-50s in leather pants and spike heels.
Yes.
Getting, you know.
That's not really Larchmont. Larchmont, you'd see that woman in her yoga pants.
Oh, is it more
That's
yoga
what
pants?
You would see.
Am I thinking
True.
More Beverly Hills?
Yeah,
I still feel
so.
Like, but there's some shishy people in Larchmont.
There are. Very.
Because Hancock Park has fucking mansions.
Yeah.
Oh, big time. Yeah. That oil was discovered in the Hancock Park district. Did you know that? It was a big oil area.
Today?
A can of WD-40.
Somehow there's still a can of oil floating around. They haven't yet put it in a plastic bottle.
Get it.
No, I think that's where the original wealth of that area came from.
Right. There was the guy.
I'm very proud of my LA history. Also, people get fucked over in show business all the time. Well, I know a lot about LA. Show business isn't fair. Oil was discovered in Hancock Park. And
so you're
what
saying
else?
That's not fair?
You're the oil in Hancock Park?
Is it not fair? Because you're saying show business isn't fair.
Yes.
And then oil was discovered. Were those two independent thoughts that define Los Angeles?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not like...
Is it unfair?
First of all, this business is unfair, and now these fucking cocksuckers are discovering oil in Hancock Park.
I think it was first the oil, then the business.
Hancock Park was the Beverly Hills before Beverly Hills.
Oh.
That's right. Where Clark Gable would live.
Do you like the old Hollywood history? I love it.
I love it too.
You do too?
You know why? Because it's the only history this region of the country has. Like you go anywhere else you go and it's like, oh, at least when you go to the East Coast, you're like, oh, look at here. There's the pilgrims were here. Or this building, you know, like the oldest buildings in New York date back to the 1600s.
Yeah.
But
that's
here,
where I'm from.
Here, right. Okay. You don't have to brag about it. I get it. Flatbush, I get it.
The pilgrims never came to Flatbush.
they didn't.
I don't know why.
They felt unsafe.
They did.
But they're like, I don't want to take a train if I have to go to Midtown.
Hey, yo.
Right.
Bunch of fucking buckleheads walking over here.
Buckleheads.
But the. Yeah, I do like all that stuff because it is it's the only history we have, and it's
right.
The,
it's showbiz history.
It's showbiz history because all of the showbiz history essentially squashed all of the like oil and Orange Grove history.
Yeah,
right.
And you know, the oldest section of Los Angeles is probably like Olivera Street, which is like the sort of the old, almost a little pueblo. And then after that, it's just like, and then Hollywood.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much it.
Downtown is interesting because now they are basically electronic stores, but they used to be famous theaters down there where all the greats did, you know, vaudeville and stuff like W.C. Fields, Chaplin, Laurel and Hardy, all those guys, and I'm always fascinated about that.
Let me ask you this. When you're backstage at like UCB or here at Meltdown or whatever, and you're doing like crazy costumes and stuff, do you ever stop and go, this is probably what vaudeville was like? Do you ever think that?
I don't. Because what we don't do well, what L.A. doesn't do well, is connect to its past. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but they don't like let you know that this is where Chaplin was or the old studios.
You got to seek it out, or like all those little Disney cottages in Silver Lake, or all the Chaplin cottages that are sort of spread out through West Hollywood and all around.
Yeah. That's good stuff. But they don't really. There's no one there. I wish there was a guy on the street or something going, Chaplin, right here, sir. Like just like kind of spotters dressed up in things that say Hollywood history. Or
we should do we should do an old timey star maps thing where it's like,
you should. Yeah,
come on, and step right up, and here's what Fatty Arbuckle's.
I think that when I drive by Paramount all the time, when I go up Gower, I always like the third door on the right side, that was the door to the Lucy studio.
Desilu?
Yeah, that was the door where that, and I'm like, oh, you know, right behind that wall was the fucking Lucy's apartment.
Isn't there a little cemetery in there,
and if
too?
I don't know.
Is that where Fred Mertz is buried? Or
I don't.
Well, he died at the Knickerbocker, and they just brought his body. He was living at the Royal.
He died at the Knickerbocker. And the Knickerbocker has an incredible
attack.
History, too.
He had a heart attack down the street, and they brought him into the Knickerbocker.
Where's the Knickerbocker?
It's on Hollywood.
It's near Yucca,
and,
isn't it?
Yeah. It's like Hollywood and Yucca, yeah.
Somewhere around there. But I think there's a cemetery somewhere, not Hollywood Forever, but I think there's a small cemetery somewhere around Paramount. And then that one in Westwood where Marilyn Monroe is buried that you would never know is there because it's surrounded by skyscrapers.
Yeah.
The cemetery?
Yeah, there's a little memorial park.
Oh,
cemetery. Is there a memorial park or is it a cemetery?
Well, they have mausoleums, so it's probably a memorial park.
But I think that's where that's where Marilyn's thing is. And
yeah, I love all that shit. Like if you like,
what is it with his? It's tough to sense it though here for some. Like it's tough to sense that all this amazing stuff happened here.
Because
maybe it's the nature of studios where they're just kind of enclosed.
Because Los Angeles, this city, had a couple of growth spurts, and it's kind of one of the reasons why the Valley is so depressing to me, because there are nice parts of it, but if you just drive down Ventura, you're like, at some point in the 70s, they were like, we have to build as fast as possible. Do you know how to design a building? No. Fuck it. Grab some stucco and just make it brown. And so like you just have all these really ugly buildings that it just sort of feels like they were desperately thrown up as quickly as possible without any regard.
Right.
I think that's what it is about Los Angeles, is that the city is so large and grew so fast that there was no planning. It was just like, this community grew up here, this one grew up here, this one blew up here, and they're like, well, now we got to connect all this weird shit with traffic. And so that's really what it is. It's a bunch of small little communities in an unplanned way, haphazardly connected by traffic.
Yes.
So there's no real... Patton Oswalt had a bit about, like, he's like, Los Angeles is actually very ugly. When people say it's beautiful, they're usually looking up at the sky. They mean the weather's beautiful. But you look at the buildings, most of them are pretty rotten.
Right. And the East Coast has great architecture.
At least there's some history there, yeah.
Yeah.
You're from Brooklyn, right?
Spent so much time in Manhattan once I hit, like, 30. No, once I hit... I don't know, 17, 14, I don't know.
Is it?
Did you try to, like, were you like... Once you sort of hit that age where you're like, I got to get out of Brooklyn and just...
Well, I had it even worse than that. My dad moved us to the quote-unquote country, which was Staten Island. So that was just kind of the suburbs, and that might as well emotionally and culturally been, you know, in Kansas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even though it was very close to Manhattan. But I escaped Staten Island when I was about, I guess around 16, 17.
Yeah.
I had a little bindle. You know those bindle... Yep.
Oh, we lost another one. There we go. Two old guys sitting
behind skipping stones on the New York Harbor, going shucks. Oh, I wanna.
Sure, it'd be fun to do something, but all this prohibition everywhere.
Pa, I hear they have theater companies over there in Greenwich Village.
Oh, son, you going funny on me now? Why are we Southern?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess because I associate low culture with this accent.
We're from the southern part of Manhattan, you see.
When I say you're going...
Soho, as it were.
When I say you're going funny, I of course mean homosexual.
That's
happened a long time ago, Pa. There was nothing to do with these parts. And by these parts, I mean my parts. Anyway.
Well, son, it's time I tell you about the great homosexual tradition of the Pepitones. Come with me. Here's a book.
Tell you
where
about,
do you... Yeah.
I don't know where that scenario went.
I was just thinking about...
That stunned me. I can't talk because I just envisioned that all playing out.
Too close to home?
Too close to home.
Too real? Did it get too real? Is that what you were talking about before?
A little
bit. Well, that's what I love about your stand-up is that... there's this presentation of this like blue collar guy, but all of the words are these incredibly literate, you know, really deep. Like your bit about the guy, about hecklers and the guy who like a really specific heckler who knows things about your life.
Right. Why do you dream about red birds attacking you at night?
Like, it's so specific. Specific.
You know what I realized is that I'm partly channeling my father in all of my stand-up. Blue collar meets new age. You know, that's my stand-up. Like, I grew up in such a blue collar neighborhood in Brooklyn and in Staten Island, yet I always like strive to get out of that blue collar stuff. And my dad is a perfect example of that. Like he would listen, he was into classical music. He'd listen to Mozart and Beethoven 1 minute, and the next minute he would just be going, "Where the fuck are my glasses?" Like we had high culture and death threats at the same time in my house constantly. My dad, for, you know, he was
choke you with these harpsichord strings.
I never knew the classical music scene was so brutal.
It's pretty intense.
You know what I mean? There are gangs in Juilliard that will cut your ass.
They will cut a bitch.
They will cut a bitch.
With the cat hair of the bow on the...
No, but so I've always kind of married... you know, real blue collar rage, like just like working class dissatisfaction and like high culture, you know, and that's what I love to do. That's what I love to do. And that's kind of who I am, too. I've become my father. I don't know if you gentlemen have become your fathers, but
getting there.
Do you ever like catch yourself
fucking my mom? Well, that was an anomaly because my parents hate each other.
I can't add to that. I was gonna say, just catch yourself sounding like your dad.
Oh, right. No, of course. I was just kidding before.
You went to a place far.
No, I was
far
just. No, I was just
beyond.
I was just raising the stage. I was just playing around. I was just playing around. Yeah. Oftentimes, I'm like, these pants are fit weird. You know. I'm like, that's my dad.
Your dad always struggled with pants.
Always. So he was a pants.
One of the first bits I wrote, do you remember that guy who got thrown in jail, and it was a big electronics franchise back east called Crazy Eddie? Yeah. And I wrote this thing where like, come on down to Crazy Swami's. Are you searching for inner peace?
Are you trying to get the demons out of your head? Well, if you come to Crazy Swami's, I got lovely lavender towels. This is one of the first. I got a warehouse full of plum incense.
That's amazing, because one of my first bits was based on Crazy Gideon, who was the West Coast version of Crazy
get
Eddie.
Get out of here. And is it that
was,
true?
It was all true, and the whole bit was about,
Crazy Gideon, I've heard of Crazy. He was a spinoff?
Well, he was just...
ABC picked him up.
But
need the Crazy Eddie type.
Yeah, it was stuff like, it was all about exploring the insanity of it. Like, if I had the courage, I would cut my own wrist. But since I've done that, I'm slashing crisis on Hamilton
great.
Beach three-speed blenders.
That was great.
Yeah. So
if I had the courage, I slit my own wrist.
If I hurt you physically, take an additional 10% off my...
Yes, I heard you do that. That's a great
That's
bit.
One of my oldest bits.
Is it?
But that idea, that guy, that, you know... I didn't thought about it in those terms, but yes, blue collar rage with the soul of an artist is a really interesting, fun concept. Like, how else could you get like Bridge and Tunnel people to relate to Trader Joe's bits?
Exactly. But you know, so I'm always mining that well of like, and I've got to keep up on higher culture because you know it's a battle in my soul. Like, I love to watch the NFL. You know, I love to watch football, but on the other hand, you know, I like to listen to, you know, box.
Min Turner Overdrive.
Jesus Christ.
You guys are not finishing my sentences properly. We are not twins. We are not long lost brothers, apparently. You know, the bass side always wins out, though, I realize. Like, as
Mozart's
much...
cock told me that. I'm sorry. It's not really...
Does that make sense? How does that make sense?
I was illustrating his point.
Okay.
I was illustrating his point. It is. It's just that puerile response to... We're talking like responsible adults now. Fart, fart, fart. Like, it's hard to not...
Yeah.
It's hard to not do that. I apologize. We're going to do better from now on. Okay? I promise.
I mean, I can't keep that promise up.
You're from Flatbush. You deserve better.
Where are you from?
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. So
that's
I'm,
an interesting little mix, huh?
I'm historically Southern.
Yeah. I would have never got that from you.
Yeah.
You really hide that. You don't, like, do the spittoon thing or... No, I haven't seen you
in
with
chaps,
a walking stick
no.
or, you know.
There's no mint julep happening.
You're not overly courteous.
No.
White linen suit. No, or the things I associate with the South, just, you know, in tremendous sweating.
Yep.
There's nothing.
No, there's nothing like that. There's nothing like that about me. We moved around a lot.
Hunting? You don't seem to be a hunter?
Not really a hunter. No, no.
Right? You're not a hunter.
I'm not a hunter.
Good for you.
I never fired a gun until we had to do a stunt on the Walking Dead show where it's like, oh, the guns that they use. You know,
yeah,
the
I fired
time.
A gun for the first time in my life a little while ago, too. I went to a shooting range because I want to protect against home invasion like the next fella.
Sure. Of course.
You know, and I went to a shooting range, and it was a bizarre experience. I gave myself, like, tremendous bruises. By the way, that was a joke about home invasion. The only way I protect against home invasion is coming at someone nude. And if that really does, that's very disconcerting to anyone who breaks in with my physique.
Yeah.
Like, you just come at someone nude when you're an overweight blue collar guy, and people are like, "Fuck it, I could do better." The house next door, or whatever it is.
But this is what I've always loved your commitment.
I can do better.
Is someone in my demeanor, someone who has lived a life not well lived, comes at you like that, nude, you want to go to another house?
Can I pitch a bit to you?
Yes.
Okay. So the guy breaks in and you come at him naked, but you're still self-conscious about your body, so you're kind of apologizing at the same time. Like, don't take my stuff. Look, I'm really working out.
That's even more – that would make them run even quicker because the psychology, the layer of horrific psychology there.
It is cold in here. Otherwise, I would be showing.
I had a low-calorie dinner last night. Have breakfast like a prince, dinner like a pauper. Where are you going?
By the way, that's how you force someone someone who's broken into your house's hand is to immediately start there. You force their hand. They're either going to kill you or leave. Because if you start in
– no, and this is my advice to people who listen to this podcast. I don't know what your demographic is, but if you are in an area where there's a lot of home invasions – immediately start talking out your inner life, because that will scare the shit out of people. I'm trying to love my wife. It doesn't work. I don't know what the fuck it is. It's something about me. I like, you know, small things in my ass, like whatever it is.
I'm sexually frustrated.
I'm sexually frustrated, yet I can't stop watching Breaking Bad, whatever it is.
I built up a lot of emotional walls to keep people out, because I feel like if I can destroy something, then it can't hurt me.
And now they're telling me there are good carbohydrates.
Yes. Yeah, you start talking about food and people leave. It's like, quinoa, it's supposed to have enough protein. I don't know if it does. I don't know if it does.
Raw food, they have to use too much garlic to flavor it. I don't buy it. I'm not buying it.
When did heat become bad?
Yeah, the cavemen ate that way. They didn't want to. They had to.
He'd either have killed you or left, because you forced their hand. There's no, like, in cold blood scenario where they tie you up and slowly, you know, Robert Blake or whoever it is, Truman Capote.
The best way to keep all your tchotchkes, really, is what we're saying.
And listen, if you're going to die anyway, you don't want your last words to be, oh, my God, please don't hurt me. What were his last words?
That's right.
He was shouting about quinoa.
He had eaten at this place called the Sun Cafe, raw food, but they didn't have good ventilation, and him and his wife's eyes were tearing, and that's when he shot him. He was in the middle of that story.
You were so – you're always so on board whenever it involves, like, comedy or performance, because I remember Furman and I came to your place once. We were going to do this thing at UCB, and then we never end up doing it, but we were going to years ago, we were going to fake the like the slideshow that you see before a movie, before they start rolling previews. So we basically did all these fake ads for things. Like, you know, fake, like,
who,
like,
was I again?
You were a guy that when we came over, we were like, okay, do you mind if we take a picture of you shirtless? And you're like,
okay.
And you didn't even ask what it was for.
That's the problem with my career. Are you the Mountain Dew people? As they're leaving. No, we're from Duck Hunters. Fuck!
So the fake ad that we made with you, we made a couple, but one of them was was an ad for X-Lax, and it's you shirtless, and you're pointing. And the quote for X-Lax was, because you work for me, asshole, where it was literally just a guy, like, using X-Lax to order his ass around.
You never did it, though, right?
Because we did it one time, and then we never did it again.
I get involved in a lot of projects that don't, you know, they film me, and then I'm like, where is it?
What happened to that?
I don't know. It's going to eventually be on what is that station? TCM with
oh yeah,
Turner.
Who's the guy
movies?
Who's taking over from? Who's the big guy on TCM?
Jay Osborne.
Oh, okay.
But now he's being kind of replaced by a younger, hipper dude.
They're still doing that.
There they go.
Yeah. I haven't watched TCM in a really long time.
Yeah,
but they still do.
I haven't either. I watch it because, you know, you flick around and
he
it's
likes
like,
the
oh,
black and white. He sees it. He's like, this
well,
is like box
it's like
for my
Charles,
eyes.
I'll flick around. It's like Charles Boyer's in it. And I'm like, oh, Christ, I probably should watch this.
Yeah.
It's not that I want to, but I'm like, I should know this history
why
about
did you,
Charles Boyer.
Why did you move to Los Angeles? Was it for more acty stuff?
That sounds like an accusatory way you put that. But
let me rephrase that. Why did you move to Los Angeles, you cunt?
To fuck my mother. No.
No, what, you too?
No, I don't know why that came out. But it happened really organically. I was working in UCB in New York, and Scott Armstrong, co-writer of Old School, came up to me and said, would you like to do one of these characters in this movie that we're filming with Todd Phillips? So I came out here to film Old School, and they put me up like a half a block from Venice Beach. And my manager, one of my first managers, was out here.
And she was like, you should come out here. Like, as I was falling in love with Venice Beach, it was wild because that's been the pinnacle for me. No, when I came out here, I was living on Venice Beach. I was working in old school. I was getting a nice paycheck and living right on the beach. And I kind of fell in love with it. And she was kind of pushing me to come out here. And a lot of my friends from New York had moved out here. So it just kind of happened. Yeah. I left it after the movie. I only came back to New York for another, like, 6 months. And then I was doing Last Comic Standing. I think it was the first season.
Oh, yeah. You were on Last Comic Standing. That's right. I always put that show out of my head.
I know, me too.
I did watch your season. Was Doug on that season? Or was that Doug in season another? Doug Benson.
I think Doug was in four.
No, Doug was not on that
season.
Who
was in your season?
I was on it twice, by the way, which I don't know why I did it the second time. But the first time, it was the first year.
That was the Dat Fan year.
Yes.
Yes.
Dat Fan had some great interviews where he cried about his family and he won the whole bundle. I didn't know it was about that.
Because you could have tapped into some stuff.
I was doing my miserable self. Like, come on. I don't, you know, just comedy, you know, it shouldn't be a competition.
I just saw Jay London wandering around Silver Lake the other day.
It'll be over soon, folks. Let me move the scene.
Jay London wandering around Silver Lake.
Yeah. He's one of those guys who's always wandering around. Like, it's not like going toward, like, he's not going to something. He's just kind of wandering.
I always want to say hi to him, but I always feel like when I do, he doesn't remember me. I met him a bunch. I used to do shows with him, you know? And then.
I think that's funny that you feel, it sounds like, slightly intimidated by Jay.
I'm a little intimidated by him, yeah. Because you don't want to be the guy who's like, hey, it's me, and we met at this thing, and then we did this show.
He's a quiet guy.
And he's a very quiet guy, but I always thought he was hilarious. But that show. The last Comic Standing show always bummed me out because I was like, oh, fuck, man. They're basically, it's because it's a partial reality show.
Yeah.
They have to do what reality shows do, which is create drama. And when you create drama from comedy, you're basically exposing comics. Like, we don't do this in the podcast, but you're basically taking all the fun out of what comedy should be.
Unless making everyone
compete and be shitty toward each other.
Unless you're Todd Glass, in which case he just did bits.
Yeah, he did
the
bits.
Whole time.
Yeah. But the competing part is such a bummer. Having to sit in the camera and go, I think I'm funnier than.
Oh,
I was like,
my God.
Oh, no.
That sucks so much.
Yeah, yeah. Or just getting judged by a panel. Is there anything worse? Like, like you do your set. And I remember this when I got knocked out, quote unquote, in Las Vegas. And I was getting judged by Aisha Tyler and a couple of other comics. I think Phyllis Diller, a couple of other people.
Yeah.
Like Phyllis Diller was like in a low grade coma at that time. No, because she passed me in the hall with a handler or whatever they call them, to people
Lover.
Who are helping you get from one place. What?
Lover.
Lover. I don't think it was a lover. But she just passed me and there was nothing was going on, you know? And
yeah.
It was just so brutal to get judged by, you know, people as disparate as Aisha Tyler, Phyllis Diller, and then I don't know who the other one was, huh?
No, Ant was a contestant.
Ant, he became,
didn't he become a judge?
Yeah, that was a debacle, all that stuff.
Is it when you were
But it got me some popularity, though.
But when you were shooting it, did you understand what was happening, or was it not until afterwards where you were like, oh, that's what we did?
Yeah, it wasn't until afterwards. I mean, I knew I didn't like the whole process of the reality vibe to it, you know? But it wasn't until afterwards that I saw, you know, the thing.
Do they make you guys live in the house together?
No, I didn't live in a house. I didn't get that far. I went to both times I went to the semifinals in Las Vegas and was voted. And they have you standing there. It's very funny. You have you standing there. And, you know, the other comics, like, I remember I was with Aaron Foley and we were both whispering under
Aaron's
our breath.
Oh, Aaron's so fucking funny.
Yeah, we were both whispering under our breath. I hope I don't get picked for the house. But I mean, you know, you're on the stage and you're standing there like beauty pageant contestants, literally. And they're going, and the next person in the house will be.
Oh,
you know what I mean? And you're like, you know, kind of fucked up.
And
I had to go through it, though, according to my shrink.
That was something you had
well,
to
she
take
tells
on.
Me I am where I am now because I went through what I went through. And I'm like, I'm paying you for this? It's an interactive internet shrink, it's called. It's internet. Have you done it? Interactive internet shrink?
No, what?
I'm kidding.
Oh, I thought you for a second.
Hello, and it's like talking to Siri. Hello, how do I get to where I want to go?
Please repeat the question.
I can't help you with that, Eddie.
I can't.
Why did Larchmont Boulevard enrage me today?
Why do you think Larchmont Boulevard enraged
me? Yes, that's exactly it. You can make a fortune with that program.
He does.
He does.
Oh, so now, so you have a special.
Not a special. There was a documentary made about me.
Oh, the documentary, which, first of all, yeah. I was in London when you were.
I heard about that.
I was performing in London, and I was staying right not far from the Soho Theater.
I saw your name
on the thing. And
yeah.
And
you go to London a lot, I guess, now, huh?
Not as much. I mean, I've been a couple times in the last year.
Okay.
Where
were you? That was really interesting because I did London in May. I had a 3-week run at the Soho Theater.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was it's a great theater. It was 6 shows a week. And I was like, holy shit, I'm doing stand up in London. I mean, I've been performing internationally now a bunch since I did Edinburgh last year.
How did Edinburgh go?
It went really good. I mean, it went surprisingly good for me, and I didn't realize how much they care about comedy over there, as opposed to like over there, comedian is like a respected occupation. You know what I mean? It's really like people are like very interested. I couldn't believe the amount of press that I got at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And it kind of opened up, like, I've been in 5 countries this year. I did, you know, it's like an international trade show in a way. You know what I mean? This year I did Dublin. I did London. I did Oslo and Bergen in Norway. These guys saw me and they run a Norwegian comedy festival. I was like, what the fuck is this? And they were the greatest audiences.
Really?
Yeah, it was
amazing. Did you do the whole month in Edinburgh?
Yes, I did. And that was like, you know, I scream my hour sets. Mm-hmm. There isn't a lot of downtime, even though I am learning to do that. But it was 25-hour shows in 26 nights. There was one day off. And on the one day off, I took a train from Edinburgh to London to screen The Bitter Buddha, the documentary about me that was just being screened then. And so I was exhausted. I was physically.
I just did that train ride. It's like a 4-hour.
It's a 4-hour train ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
It's fun. It's a fucking gorgeous ride.
Yeah, and just to me, I mean, Europe, I mean, I've just been discovering freaking Europe, which is unbelievable, you know, because I come from Staten Island where people don't travel. You know what I mean?
Well, to be fair, you traveled from Flatbush. I mean,
you did
go to the country.
Yes. No, but I think it's great that you could get on a train and go to different countries.
Completely different culture.
Unbelievable.
In just a couple hours.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I had, you know, when I was doing the Soho Theater, it was 6 shows weekly. I did 3 weeks. And I'd have Sunday off, and I was playing with the idea of getting on the train because you could take a train from London to France. And I was like, I almost did. It was like a 3-hour train ride. But I thought it would be too much for a Brooklyn boy like me to like go to France and have to then get the train back and do the show the next day. I'd be
you might be a little tired, especially if you're doing that many shows in 1 month. That's fucking crazy.
It was a lot of shows.
What was the material like? What was the crux of the material? Was it like personal stuff?
Yeah. It was personal stuff because when I go to a different country, it's like I feel like I really can't talk that much politically, like because I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't have – like, you know, like there's a great comedian in London in the UK. Do you know Stuart Lee?
I know who he is, yeah.
He's a really good comic, and he's – he talks a lot about politics and stuff, and like my voice is just going –
you're losing your voice just talking about the 25
I think it's because I've been talking about those shows.
Yeah. Mm.
But like the way – like I saw his set like at the Soho Theater. Stuart Lee performed one night and it was really kind of cool to watch his set. And it's just so specific. It's like when we do stuff about L.A., if you live there, you can be so specific. So I felt like I really you know, I would just talk about what was going on with me. And one thing that got very good laughs was me talking about how everybody in the United States has a gun and how, like, I am just like me and my wife when we're fucking, I'm pointing a gun at her, she's pointing a gun at me, and it's like, I'm going to fuck you, and she's like, I'm going to fuck – you know, like stuff like that, like just playing on the fact that there's no guns in Britain.
So did you feel like you sort of altered your set to sort of fit their culture a little bit?
A little bit, but that's – when I first did the – Edinburgh, I was so afraid that they weren't like I was like, how are they going to get me? And someone pointed out to me, well, they do speak English.
They sort of
English.
Do.
Yeah. But what they want is just to be – I mean, you perform there. They just want you to be authentic. That's all they want. And they
particularly, love – Particularly British culture, I think. Particularly British culture. If they feel like you're being inauthentic, then they will fucking attack you. They'll just call you a cunt and then scream at you.
Yeah.
If they feel like you're lying to them or if you're
You're lying to them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Obviously, if you're doing some of the things you might are lying, but I mean, like, really, like, spiritually lying to them, you know? Like, if you're inauthentic, I guess, is the best.
I think part of it, too, with Eddie, is that they, when they think of an American guy.
It's probably Eddie.
What
Eddie
are you Pepitone saying now?
Pops into their head.
What?
I'm saying.
I'm just.
Boisterous, genuine, yeah. Loud.
Right,
just a loud guy that
but,
will.
But
just,
the fact that you can present
that's what
the
they
fact
think.
That you can be that's the presentation,
yeah.
That's the rapping.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there are really intelligent, soulful things being said within that.
Yeah.
Really. I fucking loved. I saw you do this at Tiger Lily one night. I don't know if it was a bit you ever developed. We were talking about how you had just gotten over a Vicodin addiction,
right?
And you said the slogan for Vicodin.
Oh, it's like, come to think of it, I am a little sore. Like, that's the commercial. Is me looking. I said, you know, I prefaced that like saying I don't put commercials because I'm too angry to do the corporate speak. But I thought of a commercial for Vicodin. It's just me looking at a camera very kind of coquettishly going, come to think of it. I am a little sore. Vicodin. Now, what's interesting about that is I did that in Edinburgh, and someone yelled out, and there weren't big laughs like I get in the States. They don't know what fucking Vicodin is over there.
What?
They don't have Vicodin. Their painkiller, I think, is something called Scotch. And it's very good over there.
I don't understand. That's really interesting.
So those are little cultural tweaks that you have to do. Like I was like, what? I said, what do you, they know Valium, but that changed the whole bit.
Because
you know
Valium you don't take for soreness.
You don't take it. So it'd be come to think, maybe I should have changed it to come to think of it. I am feeling a little anxious.
Just make it as real as
there
possible.
There you go.
But yeah, there's little tweaks like that. Like they don't, you know, products. Like I do this bit where it's, honey, how'd you get the shirt so fresh? And instead of Downy detergent, I had to use, they have something called, I think it's Dax is their big detergent or some shit. So
it's basically the American Express Seinfeld commercial where he goes over and he bombs talking about like baseball and whatever. And then he takes his American Express card all around London. And then he's like,
that was a wicked googly.
Making.
Oh, really? Oh, that kind of shit.
Cricket references and stuff. I actually found the, I performed at the Leicester Square Theater and I found,
right. That's where you were.
I found it to be, it was great. It was really fun. I really, really enjoyed it. I want to go back.
I love London so much.
It's just hard because you can't. Yeah. You can't just go for a weekend.
Well, you can if you like 20 hours on a plane.
Exactly.
The Soho Theater, I felt a little judged. Like it was like a theater, so night out.
It's a little snazzy there.
It's a little snazzy. So I'm coming out there, and I would come out screaming, why do they keep taking Liam Neeson's kid? That was my opener. And I would come out like, I would come out laughing. That's how I would come out. I wouldn't address them. I wouldn't fucking address them. I was like, how do they keep taking this kid?
Did you see what he did to the kidnappers in Taken 1? He took their balls. And in between the rant, I would go, thank you for coming. Like, I'd lower my voice, and I'd go, thank you for coming. I'm just, I mean, you had a lot of choices tonight, and thank you for making this your choice. And then I go right back
that, that reminds me of your bit about the about your son being kidnapped.
Mm. If those motherfuckers are watching this broadcast, I will fucking murder you.
Again, if they're not here, I really
I would say if the kidnappers is in this room, I will fucking cut your balls off. I'll feed them to you one by one till you have no more balls, and I will feed them to you without a dipping sauce like you get in those nice Thai restaurants. And again, I want to apologize if the kidnap is not here, but I don't have the money that Mel Gibson had in the movie Ransom to hit a wide audience. I have to hope the kidnapper's in the room. I happen to be in at the time. I just saw Life of Pi. I addressed the audience. I was told to shut up and sit down. But I just want to make it clear that I'm not. But if you are here... Yeah, I did that bit for a while. Yeah, I should do that bit again. But there's so many kidnappings going on lately that I feel
that
like it's
topical.
Maybe that's why I'm not doing it, because it would work.
Why do you always destroy things that would work, Eddie? Come on, this is the core of it. But then there was that, and then I think, did you ever record the, when you were, was it a rap? Did you do a rap? Where you're like, guy.
The depressed rapper?
The depressed rapper, yeah.
Yeah. That one is like, yeah, now that's an interesting one, because for some reason, I don't know why, but that one didn't go over great overseas, where I'm like, you know, I hate rappers because they just have too much confidence. I would rap for the insecure and depressed, and I'd be like, yo, and I can't rap, but it would go like this. I'm going to talk to rap. Yo, motherfucker, I am going to put a cap in your ass, but not tonight. Tonight I have to take a nap. Why, motherfucker? Because I just recently switched antidepressant medications. And when you first switch, motherfucker, there's a 2 to 3 day period where your blood has to adjust. Cocksucker. And I just go on and on.
What was the one about, like...
It's a weird bit because I'm speaking it.
What was the girl... It was something about the girl's name. Like, was it, like, Jennifer or something?
I'm going to fuck your fat ass, Julie.
Julie!
But not until... Not because I was always saying that in rap songs. They're always talking about fucking fat asses. But and so I'd be like, I'll fuck your fat ass, Julie, but not for at least 6 to 8 weeks, because I was recently told I look clownish. So what I'm going to do is cook with very little oil. Very little oil. And like I scream very little. Matter of fact, they even have spray oils on the market now. I'm going to use spray oils. And I'm going to work out in an intense environment. And if I lose 30 to 40 pounds, then I'll fuck your fat ass. But it's hard to come off. The weight doesn't come off. I get lonely and I start eating while I'm watching things like, I don't know, anything. I just meander into nothing.
But it's the information is so specific. Like, it's not... I don't... It would be very difficult for someone to steal your material because it's so specific to you.
And the
information is so specific. It's just like it really just feels like you're just sort of pulling this endless thread out of your brain and then letting it collect.
That's kind of what I'm doing, yeah. Which is sometimes hard for me. That's a gift and a curse, which I know is a popular saying, but it's like I sometimes have trouble building sets because I like to just do that thing where everything comes out on a thread. But sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't like to build on it.
Is it hard for you to do TV sets?
Really hard.
Because,
man,
I would imagine that there's a certain amount of like
– it's been a bane.
You have to kind of let the audience know what you're about, and then you can kind of get into the stage persona. But when you only have like 4 minutes, how do you do that?
It's difficult. It really is difficult. I've done them, but it's difficult for me to do TV. I got to figure out how to do them better, you know, how to just build them better in my style. I have to do that before I die. No, you know what I mean. I'm getting up there, you know.
So I've heard about Bitter Buddha, but I haven't seen it yet. So is it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, I have a DVD for you, so you'll be able to see it. But it is.
I really want to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Documentary. This guy, Stephen Fine Arts, really great director. I didn't know back then, but he approached me after seeing me do a lot of the live rants on WTF. Like, mm-hmm. he just said, oh, fuck, I want to do a documentary on you. And I was like, okay, I like this guy immediately. And he followed me around for, I think it was close to a year. And he did a really good job because he really gets my stand-up. He filmed me doing a lot of stand-up. And he also filmed me. The film culminates with me going to New York and headlining Gotham. And he catches me and my dad. My mom died a while ago, but he catches my relationship with my dad really good. And there's a really great emotional arc to the film. And I wouldn't say if it wasn't true. I'm not, you know, it's just like I'm really happy with the film because, well, I mean, it was tough for me to watch. I mean, a lot of the intimate stuff is tough to watch. I like watching myself perform, but, you know, the stuff in my, you know, with my dad was a little difficult. But it really has a payoff is what I'm saying. When my dad comes to see me headline at Gotham, he hasn't been in Manhattan for about 7 years. He hasn't seen me perform in many years. And we have kind of a contentious thing happening before the show. And that's all I'll say.
Oh, shit.
But it really has a nice arc. And, you know, there's just a lot of good stuff in it, I think. And I'm really happy with it. We did the festival circuit with it. We showed it in London, in Leicester Square, actually, in that cool Prince Charles Theater.
Oh,
I don't know
yeah,
if you know
yeah.
that one. And we showed it in Edinburgh, and we showed it at Slam Dance, and we showed it all in South by Southwest. And it was really cool. And now it's on DVD, but you can get it on iTunes, and there's a website, thebitterbuddha.com. You can get it as well. You know,
does it feel weird that that's out there?
Yeah, you don't know. No, I mean, because I like it, I really like it. But I know what you're saying. Like, why would if there was a document? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, just because, you know, there's a. Sometimes I think if you have a strong stage persona, you might be there might be a barrier between who you are
right.
more intimately.
Yeah.
And maybe that, you know, you don't.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, what's interesting is I'm pretty much like I am, but
right.
I'm also very serious. And I think all day long, you know, when I'm like making podcasts or whatever, and I go home and I'm just very quiet and serious.
Yeah.
But also, it's kind of private and protective to the standpoint. this drives my girlfriend crazy.
Yeah.
I just shut all the curtains in the bed. I don't like curtains open. Even if it's not even possible for someone to see in.
Well, with ladder technology.
That's true. And she was like, why do you – and I'm like, I don't know. I just don't –
You
just,
want
I like the protection.
You want that bubble to
I
be
like
there.
The protection. And so I
yeah,
don't –
it is
I
a
would
little
sort
weird.
Of feel like if there were intimate moments just out there that
– There are for me some cringe-worthy moments like, you know, it was difficult to watch some of the stuff because, wow, I'm like just showing, you know, like some of my flaws. You know what I mean? Like there is a scene with me on a treadmill. No, I'm kidding. But, I know exactly what you're saying. But as a whole, I really like it.
Was it any different feeling than Last Comic Standing?
Oh, big time. Oh, big time. That was all so fucking contrived, that Last Comic Standing. I was not in any competition with anyone, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, and I felt like it was a guy, as opposed to Last Comic Standing, I felt like it was a guy who really understood. I mean, he wanted to film me because he really loved what I did. You know what I mean? And I felt like he really, you know, he became a good buddy of mine, and we're good buddies. But I felt like it was, you know, he was kind of honoring me instead of like going, what can I get out of you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And but like the first day of filming, I remember I was doing this bit at the Steve Allen Theater. I don't know what they call it now. They change it every couple of days. But I was doing this bit at the Steve Allen Theater at Ron Lynch's Tomorrow Show where
it's
I heckle.
A great show.
Yeah, where I heckle from the audience. I always do this character where I'm a collage artist from Eagle Rock. And I'm always – I always have a sick wife at home who's being kept alive in a vat of blue liquid. And it's just this running weird –
She's kept alive. And I'm just, he loves when I come and go, it's not easy to make a living as a collage artist. You try all the scissors and the glue and your wife is in a vat of blue liquid and she still flirts with the pizza guy, like just kind of shit like.
But that tomorrow show is a fun show, by the way.
The what?
The tomorrow show. A ton of people show up at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
12, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But Steve Fine Arts is the director, and he filmed me. That was the first night he filmed me. And I was like, I felt tight. I felt like, oh shit, don't tell me I'm going to feel like there's a camera looking. But, you know, after that first night, I just kind of relaxed into it, and I kind of just sensed and I intuited that it was a really good thing, good project, you know, and it has been really good. It's been nice for me. It's given me a nice little validation, you know, to have a movie made about me. And like I said, we took it around the country, and it's 94, and this is no kidding, 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Hey, that's really good.
Yeah, it's really good. It's gotten really good reviews, and you know, I've gotten a lot of attention from it, so it's been great.
Are you okay with succeeding?
Why do so many people ask me that?
Well, I think it's just a comic thing. I think it's just a comic thing.
Oh,
like,
okay.
It's that.
Does every comic? Are you?
I definitely sense destructive. Like you know, it's a protection thing where someone, because you can't control the outcome of something. But if you smash it, then you control it. You know what I mean? Or,
yeah.
Or if you're comfortable in a certain level of accomplishment or achievement, and then you start to get outside that, even if it's good, you're like, oh, I got to get back to before. And so you subconsciously like smash, 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 smash. So I think that's a very comic performer sort of a thing to do. So that's why I'm asking. It wasn't you specific. I just...
Oh, okay.
Is it...
My narcissism thought it was, you know, very specific to
me. Let's talk about that then.
No, because... No, but I understand that. It's like, hold it. Wait a minute. I rail, and I'm big on this, like just railing against everything. So now if people are starting to like me, then I'm like, well, why are you – you know, it's like I like that famous Groucho Marx line, I don't want to be a member of a
club that would have me. Yep.
Yeah, something like that I do have to – I have to fight against. But I am – I like success, you know? I got a nice Honda Element.
Hey.
Things are coming up, Eddie.
I think it's –
That is a funny car to mention. By the Element, it's boxy but very practical.
I think it's – I still think that character works.
You want to go to Costco? Call me.
Even if people are being nice to you, you're like, what is this bitch's fucking problem? Bringing me food, you know, like you still
every waitress.
It still works.
Yeah, it still. I
it
think
still
it's,
could
it's,
work.
I think it still works.
You haven't quite grasped the concept of waiter patron yet. You're like, why the fuck do you keep bringing me food?
Well, but also when people are seeing you,
sir,
when people see you perform. Do you think they're surprised afterwards when they find out, like, oh, he's actually a really nice guy? Do you think
they always are.
Yeah.
They always are because, you know, I don't know how I have to engage emotionally on stage. Like, I swear to God, I have to come on stage and I have to, like, feel, like, upset. But my rage is cartoony, but I have to be in that frame of mind. Like, I have to get my voice up. I have to get my dander up. I can't just go on stage and do one-liners. I wish I could, because I could probably live longer. But people – so when I get off stage after screaming and ranting, people are always like, holy shit, you know, you're so quiet and nice and all this stuff. And I'm like, I know. I love you.
It's performance.
It's, yeah.
But some people take it very literally. Like, they will take it very literally when you say something on stage and they think,
oh, totally. Yeah.
Never underestimate an audience's inability to catch, like, something ironic or to, like, if you tell them something, they just believe it. Because most of the time, like, that's just how people
interact.
They
want to, too, because they kind of, I don't know about you, but they fall in love with my persona. They love that guy. They don't want it to be another guy, you know. They love that guy who's raging against all this shit. And then I come off stage and I go, no, I'm okay.
I'm good. I'm just going to go over here. Just have
Do you
some
like
tea.
Jell-O? Does anybody eat Jell-O anymore? I love
Not
Jell-O.
What I expected. After
Not
I
what
show.
I expected.
Why can't you be off stage more like you are on stage?
It would be funny to come off stage and just, like, at the bar in a club or something, or, and just start going, hey, you see what I mean? Look at the lighting. Like, you never let up, and you never let up. Like, it's just bullshit.
You wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't be able to sustain that.
You're describing Todd Glass.
Kinda. Yeah. Kinda. Yeah.
You are describing Todd.
I had Todd on my DVD release party at the Improv, and I walked into the Improv, and there was just a shitload of people walking in, and Todd was there, and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, he just started playing, we're not performing yet, but it was like, ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Pepitone, and he came here for you people.
I love
And
that.
I wasn't ready to perform yet. I was actually feeling, it was one of those nights where I was like, boy, I hope I have the energy tonight. And as soon as I crossed the threshold, and then Todd always says, was it too much? Like that's what Todd does later. Was that too much? I hope you don't. I'll never do that again. I was like, no, it's fine.
Todd is one of the most fun people to hang out with.
Todd behaves like the world assumes comedians always act. Todd is always on. And that's why every comedian, I've never met a comedian who does not adore Todd Glass.
But the levels of it go so deep that I feel like Todd does that because he expects that's what the world thinks that comics are like all the time.
You really take it to that?
That is interesting.
Isn't it?
That is interesting.
I really feel like that has a lot to... There's a lot of that, too.
I love Todd because the great thing about Todd is that what you really sense is that he's just having fun playing.
Yeah.
And that's really...
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if there's a microphone or not. He's
that's
going
right.
To, yep. He's going
so
to
it's
do
genuine.
It. Yeah.
And that's really why we all got into comedy, is that we fucking love to fucking play. Yeah.
But it, but for me...
Oh, you didn't get into it for that?
For me...
Eddie, I had specific goals.
My goals were a specific dollar amount and no less than 3.5 pussies per week.
How do you kind of half pussy? Hand job?
No, it's
hand
just...
job's always funny, by the way. What is it about hand job and the former Yugoslavia that you can never... I don't know why.
I think it's with Todd, I don't know how he has the energy, because when I come off stage, if I've done a show, if I've done two shows in a night, or if I've worked all day...
two shows in a night,
I just
man.
Don't have the energy to be like, on. Like, that just saps all of the emotional energy that I have, and I just get really, like, quiet and then introverted.
Yeah. He must be very sad to see when he's not on. when he's just hanging out, like when he's in a tub. I picture it in a tub.
I did comedy and everything else with him. I would produce that podcast with Jimmy and Todd. And Todd and I would carpool to Pasadena to do it at Jimmy's house. And so Todd and I... We'd leave at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon from L.A. to go to Pasadena.
Which you
for
would do that listening is the worst time
because we
of
had
day to
be
leave.
There at like 7 or something. So we'd like do it, and
that.
It would just be it. Just think of a 2-hour ride with Todd Glass, and twice every week, and it was just the fucking. We would die laughing at license plate frames. This one time we're driving, and this woman in front of us in the blue Honda had a license plate frame, so they'd rather be watching I Love Lucy. And that was the funniest fucking thing in the world to us. That no matter what she was doing, I'd rather be watching I Love Lucy.
What if you're watching I Love Lucy?
I'd still rather be watching a different episode.
Around her TV is a frame that says, I'd rather be watching a different episode of I Love Lucy.
I prefer the New York years. I don't like when they went to California.
So what would you want to do a sitcom? Like what's your kind of dream job?
I guess my dream thing television-wise would be a sketch show that revolves around me. Like I would love to do, kind of where I could like just go into different scenes and situations and stuff like
so
that.
So what you're saying is the sketch show was built different premises like and different sketches, but you are, every sketch, your Eddie Pepitone shows up into whatever
like
situation
it is.
Like
the old Dana Carvey show.
Is that, did he do
something like that? Dana was different characters all the time. I'm just imagining a world where Eddie can react to every situation that the sketch is built around.
Oh, right.
So it's always Eddie.
One of the ideas I have is that I'm in a straitjacket. It opens, I'm in a straitjacket, and you see me in a white room, and there's a fly, you know, and it's going to land on my nose. And the fly, and this is how it would go, the fly then in my mind turns into an airplane. And so the show, and then I'm on a plane and it's a sketch, you know, a bit of reality from my life, kind of a Walter Mitty type thing where I'm a guy who wound up in an institution because life just fucking destroyed him. But his imagination is like, you know, it's, he's either getting back at the people that put him in that institution in each sketch, you know, like,
is this the comedy show?
No, very much so.
I'm kidding.
No, it could go the other way. I hear what you're saying,
but it could be like a weird dark hybrid.
Yeah, I like the hybrid stuff though. I like the dark stuff. You know, I like what's a great dark comedy? Like the greatest dark comedy, either TV or film, like with a really dark edge to it. Can you think of one?
Well, I guess.
Or who's got that vibe? Because that's the stuff I like to do, you know? I like to do really dark comedy.
What's a good example of that?
I'm racking my brain. I can't really.
What?
Fargo?
Fargo's. The Coen brothers, they do that stuff pretty good.
I was trying to think of television.
It could be TV or film. TV or film. Can you think of any, like, really good dark movie? The Coen brothers do that pretty good.
I would say Fargo.
Yeah. Yeah, so a kind of Fargo of the Mind TV show, like, you know, on a good cable outlet. You have any cable outlets you available?
Oh, let me check.
Or at least an app on a phone. The dark comedy app.
It's like an outlet.
You're just
sort of like an outlet. you said something earlier that I was going to ask you about, but I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was about the straitjacket or doing the show. Have you thought about just like maybe building a small film around this idea?
Not too hard, but for some reason I saw it more of as a TV thing. But yeah, a film thing would be interesting.
I mean,
too.
with Louis and Marin's show and other like people like they
Louis
should,
a good example.
They would
be
more open to pitches based around a guy.
Yeah. True. Yeah. True. I don't know, but
let's make it happen. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
You want to do it now?
Maybe we're all in your brain right now.
You're just daydreaming about podcasts.
These fucking Do you know that more people – actually, this is a real statistic. More people are murdered during podcasts than traffic accidents in this country. You see, that's if you say so. No, I don't think that's right.
So you're saying less people are murdered during car accidents than there are during podcasts.
Oh, right. That's why that works.
That's why
that works. They're accidents.
Now, does getting a hit while you're in a car by another car count as a murder? Or do you mean like someone has to come along and murder you in a...
There's just been a lot of podcasts. There's a lot of violence in this industry. In this form.
Well, personally, I appreciate you taking us to task. For this, we have perpetuated a lot of violence in podcasts. But seriously,
what's up with chemtrails?
I mean, come on.
Come on, man. They don't just appear for no reason.
You're right. It's exhaust from a jet. You're welcome.
Were you doing a show with Patton's brother, too?
Oh, the pudding.
Yes.
Video. Those are super dark. Now, that's Matt Oswald's brain.
Yes.
And, so, you know, I'll contribute to it. Matt approached me like a couple of years ago. I don't know how long it was at this point. But a couple of years ago, he showed me these monologues that he wrote. And they were like written in my voice. So I said, yeah, I'll film them. And then we kept filming them. And we're actually going to kind of wrap up pudding pretty soon. Aww. But we'll do it. We'll do it.
A Nerdist exclusive. Take that, Deadline.
What'd you say? What was that?
Nikki Fink's here, actually.
Oh, Nikki. Hollywood Deadline. But we're gonna also put them out occasionally. But yeah, they're pretty damn dark. It's Corporate Break Room,
And it's hilarious and great idea by Matt, where he just sits eating puddings and I come in with just the most horrific tales. The most horrific tales of violence and deprivation, and then kind of like, all right, see you later. Like, it's just, and he's, you know, he's in his white shirt and I'm in my little suit and tie.
Oh, man. Oh, I should put
it's
out
the underbelly of corporate.
I should put out the video. We made a video. Furman and I made a video with you where you played
Darwin?
Where you played Darwin, thing? Yeah.
I love that one.
We haven't really released it. I've just been holding on to it because I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. But you put it out there when it
was
we first
we
did
put it.
It
up on Super Deluxe, and then like it was the week Super Deluxe
Super
got canceled.
Deluxe, that's right.
And so then it just you know, we
I thought it was a great song.
We got it.
Do
back.
You still write songs with Mike?
Occasionally. It's
you
really
guys
hard.
Are so good together.
Oh, thanks, man. No, it's really hard just because you know
Corazon. I'll never forget Corazon. You
Corazon
poured your heart. That
you
always made me laugh.
You have to
so
commit
hard
to
the Corazon.
You have to commit to it. And at the time, it's not as funny. But in retrospect, it's funnier the times when it didn't work.
Yeah.
The first time
because
we,
of the level of that's how my shows go when they don't work. Like the level of commitment met with.
Yeah, I think like in 2007 we did it at Montreal. And they didn't have Spanish songs. And so, because French is their language. And so singing this song in Spanish about the heart, about medical facts about the heart, but everything is, you know.
The video stuff was
corazón,
good, too.
El corazón es una bomba muscular. Like, the heart is a muscular pump that regulates the flow of our life's blood. But all in Spanish. But then going, oh, fuck you guys, I'm going to commit even harder.
Yes.
Like, in retrospect, those are kind of funnier to me because here's the, like, we did it on.
They are only in retrospect because in the moment, it's a lot of work.
You did it on Kimmel, right?
We did it on Kimmel. Well, Jimmy saw us do it at M Bar and it fucking, like, it was our closer. It destroyed. And he was like, you got to do this on the show. And so Bobcat Goldthwait was directing and he goes, well, how do you guys want to do this? And I said, well, we should put on, like telenovela, like we should make it really
Spanish,
like, whoa, it's beautiful. Spanish. So we wore these ridiculous like Spanish disco outfits, and
which you don't really do.
No,
we didn't do it in the
and I guess maybe we should have done it the way we normally did because it was just one thing too many to ask of the audience, and so they thought we were serious, and
that audience is a little weird sometimes. I've done a bunch of things on Kimmel.
Well, talk shows in general can be weird because people are touristy and they're distracted and there's a lot of things.
That's
true. There's a band over there and people I know.
Look what Conan's doing.
Yeah, exactly. And so it can be a weird environment. And and so it's all in Spanish. And so we had the English subtitles put on the screen. And my dad, who is the voice of Middle America.
Is he?
Whatever my dad likes, like, all right, that's the trendy thing in Middle America.
Yeah.
My dad goes, I saw your – my dad's usually very supportive, but he said, I saw your performance, but I got to ask, why didn't you sing the song in English? Because you're forcing people to read along at the bottom. I was like, well
– wow,
there
that's
it
the
is.
Whole bit.
Yeah, oh my no, God. It is.
That's the whole bit. Did you even answer that question? Because
no,
that's sort of an answer in itself.
I think I just got indignant. Like,
because
it's in Spanish. And you see, I know that there aren't Spanish stations in Memphis currently, but the word Corazon is in almost every song. And if you knew that, it would be really funny. And so we just took that and made it medical facts about the heart. We listened to a lot of Enrique Iglesias to do study before we made the song. You know, like I tried to... You can't explain it.
Yeah. Let's get some French fries, son, and let's forget about this.
Don't say French fries. They hate it.
But it was good to see you. And
thank you, Chris.
I haven't. I think I saw you at that. What was that show downtown that we did? Which it wasn't the downtown, and it wasn't.
It wasn't Holy Fuck.
It wasn't Holy Fuck. I think there was another show at another downtown, like gallery sort of thing. That was real. Are you performing?
Whoa! Oh, that was. Yes, that's right. That's the last time I saw you. That was the Hot House.
Hot House. Yes.
Yes, the Hot House, and now and they perform. They do it downstairs. That's a crazy.
Are you
show
doing a lot of shows around LA still?
I am now because I was traveling a lot, and now I'm here. So for the next couple of months, I'm doing a bunch of shows.
Oh, great.
In LA. Yeah, yeah. So. I'll be here for a bit.
So Eddie Pepitone, you're just Eddie Pepitone on Twitter?
Yes, at Eddie Pepitone.
With just one P in the middle.
Yeah. Why do people do two P's? It's P-E-P-I-T-O-N-E.
Because they love Dr. Pepper.
No, I don't think that's it.
Isn't it?
No.
That's why I did it.
It could be.
Furman and I wanted to pitch you a bit. We wanted to make a video called Eddie and the Pepitones, where it was you up front and then five of us behind you dressed like you. just yelling, you know? Like some sort of a, I don't know.
I like that.
Whatever the song will be. Come with me to the sea of love. Like, just us in the background while you did your stand-up. We were basically musically accompanying you.
You wanted to do. Do you remember when you were like, I forget where we saw each other, but you were like, we gotta fucking do Pepitone ringtones.
Oh, Pepitones, yes.
I never did that.
Your phone.
Pepitones, yeah. Pick up your phone, you fucking idiot. Like, that's all you hear.
Let's hang on.
Moron.
My mother never picked me up as a child.
Now, everybody
I've
met.
Pick me up.
Yeah.
But then it gets weird.
We can do it right now if we just let Eddie say. Now, Eddie, we're going to do a phone ring one. Say something. We'll be quiet. You do it. And anyone can take this and put this on their phone as a phone.
Hey, you fucking moron! It's me, your phone! Pick me up! Stop flirting! Hey, moron! What do you think you bought this fucking phone for? So you can let it ring? Do you know who's calling you? You fucking idiot!
Now you have to say something really arty in there, too.
Yeah, yeah. Hey! You fucking moron! Get your ass out of your Bach cello concerto bullshit! You know you don't really listen! You try to impress...
It becomes the longest ring ever.
What you gotta understand about the Baroque period?
Oh, Eddie Pepitone. I adore hanging out with you, and I hope that we'll have you back on soon.
I would love to.
And I hope people watch Bitter Buddha. Now I will go watch the movie, and then maybe I'll learn something about you. I'll learn some things.
I look forward to it.
And also, can I plug that I'm starting my own podcast?
Oh, no. I'm
That's not called loud. Pep Talks.
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
With Pep Talks with the Bitter Buddha, Eddie Pepitone. Part of ATC Network.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Is that? Have you started that yet?
I'm going to start it in September.
Okay.
Nice.
So look for that.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris.
Good to see you. Matt?
I got nothing.
Jonah?
Thank you, Matt.
He's not here.
What?
Yeah.
I thought he was just being exceptionally quiet.
He had an audition.
Sell out.
He was like, I'm so sorry. Please don't be upset.
I'm so sorry.
I got to audition for this Vicodin commercial. I'm supposed to say, maybe I am a little
Those
sore.
Sons of bitches, if they are taking... Pick up your phone! Stop taking Vicodin! That would be a good one. You see? You can't hear me because you're on Vicodin. That'd be a funny one.
Quit taking Vicodin and take a fucking call!
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerds Podcast is brought to you by Warby Parker. Pick some glasses, they'll ship them to you, then send them back with the one you want in your prescription, and then using the offer code Nerdist, you get free expedited two-day shipping to put working glasses on your face. That's warbyparker.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 65th National Finals of Distinguished Young Women.
Every year, one girl from every state leaves her family, her whole life behind, for 2 weeks. And spends each day training, practicing, preparing. Because to win this competition, she needs to wow a panel of judges with her academic record, her athletic ability, her speaking skills, and a show-stopping talent.
I met her and I was like, she's gonna win.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
When I sing that song about being a black woman in America, there's gonna be backlash about that.
Oh, I'm just so happy. So happy.
I don't want to see them. I don't want to talk to them.
And then we stayed with them for the next year,
unpacking just what happened those 2 weeks in Mobile. I'm Shimo Liai, and from Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.